And thanks again to Romeo's Red for just opening the meeting, and I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Massive welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room this evening. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So unusually, we actually have two speakers in the room. First of all, I want to start off by thanking Malcolm for coming along, willing to cover for our speaker tonight if he was unable to make it, but I'm pleased to say he has. It falls to me to introduce him. I look forward to having Malcolm back in the not too distant future to actually come and share for us. So our speaker tonight is, we all know him and love him. He's been around in our meetings what it feels like forever, I think, going right back to the early days of our meetings, and he's been here with us ever since. We speak on the phone, not as often as we should probably, but we do, and it's a real pleasure to share some stuff with this individual. I've watched him come into these meetings and go through the things he's gone through, and we've shared a lot of things over the last few years about different stuff. Like all of us, we all have challenges, but it's a privilege to watch someone come into our meetings and grow and develop as a human being and become a valuable member of our fellowship. And these meetings, he celebrated a milestone in recovery this week, just gone. I'll leave him to share that if he so chooses. So Steve B, please share your experience, strength and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, however long you're comfortable with. The floor is yours, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I am Steve, also Steve, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Steve.
Thank you, mate.
Hi, so many of you, some of you at least know me. And the ones that know that my life isn't always easy. I sometimes share about the difficulties that I have. As Steve mentioned, I celebrated nine years clean last week. Which is why I've been asked to share today. Because that's what we do on milestones, especially, with a substantial, what we call substantial clean time. And just the disclaimer on that statement, substantial clean time, is that a day we consider, in Narcotics Anonymous, we consider 24 hours substantial clean time. Before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I couldn't even get a day clean. I couldn't really, but I probably didn't. But I certainly couldn't string them together. Maybe I could get clean. I certainly couldn't live. The problem was that I couldn't live. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't, I thought I got to a stage where I thought the drugs were the problem. So I stopped the drugs, found out I couldn't live without drugs either. See, that was the problem. So what was it? Was it the drugs that was a problem? Or were the drugs the solution? And I was confused with that for a while. I don't believe I had an alternative, and like a viable, workable alternative, till I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and it was like a slender thread of hope, really, because I tried psychiatrists, I tried the psych ward, I went to jail, prison, so that's hospitals, your jails, institutions. The only thing I didn't try was, actually, I did try death as well. I tried that as well at some point before I got clean. Failed at that, and I failed at quite a lot of things. When I got into the harder drugs, the harder stuff, the stuff that really numbs feelings and kills pain, I believe part of the selling point of that for me was that basically I didn't have to deal with the feelings of being inadequate and feeling like a failure, because the drugs suppressed all that and smoothed it all over, and I was okay with it. I was okay with having failed at life, because I'd found something that worked for me. It felt good. Yeah. Kind of lost my thread a little bit, but anyway, basically I'll go back to what, the message for the newcomer is that, like, what, and what I was saying before, like Narcotics Anonymous gave me a day clean, basically. Yeah, I had that gift. I had that. I mean, it, well, for, on first coming to Narcotics Anonymous, it might have taken me a while to get it, but eventually I got there, and I got a day clean, and I learned at some point as well that a day clean is a successful day. I learned that was a success to be, kind of celebrated, but something, for me personally, I learned that. I can't take the credit for that stuff. I need to give the credit to what I call today a higher power, which is a power greater than me, which helps me stay clean. Some of us call it I don't know, some of us use the word God. And when I first, and the God that we speak of is a God of our understanding. A God, basically, we can choose what we want to believe about that, and we don't even have to use the word God. But when I think when I'm trying to remember what, when I saw the program, when I first saw the steps written down, when I came, because I learned about the steps. I came to meetings and they told me that the solution was in the steps. And I couldn't. It's like I suppose it might as well have been written in ancient Egyptian or like Double Dutch or something, because it just didn't really compute. It didn't really sort of make sense to me, any of it. And the first step, I knew I was a hopeless case. I knew, I couldn't see how I could get anywhere with the program, that the first step was to admit my powerlessness, being powerless over my addiction. How am I ever going to have hope, like, if I'm just powerless? It was difficult for me to see the hope, really. But what I could see, the thing that really, really, I think, stuck with me, the memory that stuck with me, from first coming as a newcomer, coming through the doors as a newcomer, the thing that stuck with me is that I met these people in the rooms, who were actually doing grown-up stuff. Yeah, they were, they were doing their best. They were doing their level best to live life. Yeah, it's like, and quite humble and helpful with it. They were nice people. They were the kind of people that I wanted to be around, the kind of people that I wanted to be like. I wanted to be like them, and. I'll be honest, when I got that message, the drug still held a lot of attraction for me. It took many, many years before I got to that point where I'd had enough. I had to do a lot of re I've heard people in the rooms call it research. I had to do a lot of research. I had to find out the hard way, that drugs weren't going to work for me, and I had to keep trying. I tried as hard as I could to make the drugs work, to actually live life using drugs, because I didn't want to stop. Honestly, if I'm really honest with you, no. Well, part of me did, part of me knew, part, I think, the, my conscience, that part of us we call the conscience. Yeah, this is your conscience speaking, telling me, I could hear my mum's voice sometimes. You're ruining your life. Do you know what I mean? What are you doing with your life? My dad would say things. I can't remember what my dad's voice, but it sometimes comes back to me what he used to say to me. I didn't want to believe that I was off track. I didn't really even want to believe that I'd wandered off track, to be honest. I when I was on the drugs, I had quite a good level of acceptance of the way things were. It's just when I didn't have drugs that I knew that I had to change. I knew that something had to happen. And I remember when I was, when I was withdrawing, that I would surrender myself to anything, really, that would get me out of this. endless loop, endless cycle, you know, getting the getting, the using, and then basically going through withdrawals and thinking about getting more, you know, and I would think only think about getting out of it. And no, I wouldn't only think about getting out of it when I was withdrawing, because sometimes I'd sit there using and still be thinking of ways of stopping. You know, it's just, and it really is, and that is, I suppose, the insanity of addiction towards the end of my addiction, that the fact that I was using when I was still using and still, you know, still kind of driven to do it, yeah. But, you know, I knew my intellect, yeah, I in my intelligence and my rationale, I knew that I had to do everything that I could to stop. You know, and I believe at some point I did actually get that whilst I was using, you know, back in those days, I believe at some point I did actually get down on my knees, you know, and prayed to a God, you know, that I probably didn't understand. Do you know what I mean? But like, you know, what do you do? Do you know what I mean? What can you do? You know, what's the solution? You know, like, what are you supposed to do when there's nobody, you know, like, but, you know, and you know, I think in those early days, I'd learned it. Like we have a little white booklet in Narcotics Anonymous. We have a little white booklet, and from those early meetings, they gave me pamphlets and like a little white book and a little bit of literature to go away with. And when I was, like I say, when I was withdrawing, I used to look through my boxes in my bedroom. I used to go through my boxes because I had cardboard boxes full of junk, and I might find by accident a pamphlet from Narcotics Anonymous. And I would see it, and suddenly I would sense this hope, this I don't know what you could call it, but I realized I somehow knew that there was a possibility of getting out, but it seemed so far away, it seemed so distant, it seemed almost impossible. And you know, so in those early years, you know, like, you know, I wouldn't even say that I was in and out, because I was out most of the time, you know, like I was out basically. But you know, I used to come to a meeting once in a blue moon, but I did get the message, the seed was planted. I'm just grateful that it, you know, I'm grateful that it did actually grow, you know, that something came of it is what I mean by that. You know, something came of it, because eventually, you know, I mean, I went, my story involves psych wards, like as I've already said, jail. You know, that was quite a long time ago. That was in 2000. But I think my recovery story actually started in jail, because there was a rehab. There was like a rehab kind of billet. There was some in prison. They did make some kind of effort to rehabilitate drug users. Yeah, drug using offenders. And that was. I don't know. Did I hear the message of Narcotics Anonymous there? I don't know. I can't recollect that. I have no idea. But anyway, I knew that there was an alternative from prison. It wasn't, you know, I can't remember what message it was. There was a message that I got there. Just that there is another way. Do you know what I mean? Another way of living. It is possible. 2004. I mean, basically, I remember what. So skip forward a few years. I've told this story before, but I bumped into. I went. I basically blagged my mum's head. I pestered my mum for like a £5 note, so I could go down to the pub and have a beer or two, because I didn't have any drugs. So I didn't have any. I didn't have any gear, any drugs. So I said, you know, I said to my mum, you know, can I borrow a fiver so I can go and have a drink, like, you know, have a couple of jars. So she did. She lent it me. I walked down the local, and it was empty. There was nobody in there. And I bought this beer and then a pint of beer. And as I was just about to walk out and go and have a cigarette, there was this guy, a guy sitting on a table on his own with a Coca-Cola. And I just felt compelled to ask him what was he doing sitting there on his own in a pub with a Coca-Cola. I said, you know, probably asked him, you know, are you driving? And he said, no. So I was like, well, then why are you sitting there in a pub drinking Coca-Cola? And he explained to me that he was a recovering alcoholic. And I don't know why, but I felt I needed to sit down with this guy and ask him more and have a conversation with him. And what I found was that we had a lot in common. We had something in common, which basically was the disease of addiction. Well, in NA terms, we had this addiction thing in common. He told me he was the same as me. We were the same, according to him. And he'd been to treatment. He'd been to a treatment center. Cut a long story short, I eventually ended up in this treatment center, and I failed. I took some cannabis in with me, like an addict, you know, like you'd expect of an addict, you know, and I got kicked out after about 4 weeks. But again, whilst I was there, some people went off to a meeting, and this time it was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. That was where I do remember Narcotics Anonymous being mentioned, and it was attractive to me. It was something that I wanted to be part of, but it was still distant. It was still too distant because I hadn't finished with my using my disease. Disease, is that the right word? My addiction still had a grip on me, you know, like, or I still had a grip on it. I still had a grip on my using. I wouldn't let go of it, you know. So, you know, I spent a few years in and out of psych wards then. You know, I had some really strange experiences. I was smoking, I'll tell you guys, it doesn't matter what you used. We're not interested in what you used. You know, you can have used, I'll just say this as a disclaimer before I mention it. You know, we're not interested in what drugs are used. We're not interested. It doesn't matter. Addiction is addiction. Yeah. And it really doesn't matter. If you've got a problem with drugs, you're welcome in Narcotics Anonymous. And the program offers us our program offers us a solution to the problem of addiction. So it's not, you know. But, you know, yeah, you know, for me, I used drugs because I had a problem. Basically, it was a me problem kind of thing, really. Yeah. And I've kind of lost my thread just a little bit there again. Yeah, I've done it again. Yeah, so where was I? I come out of rehab. And so I think I was talking about the psych wards and all that. See, now, you know, maybe I was probably in the right place, wasn't I? Do you know what I mean? In a psych ward. Yeah. Oh yeah, I remember now. Yeah, basically, yeah, yeah. So I was just gonna say, I mean, I'll just because I've given you that disclaimer about drugs, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's not important. We're not even interested in what you used. We're interested in is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help, yeah. That's in our literature. That is Narcotics Anonymous. But you know, the drugs I used, you know, I might as well tell you, you know, I started off with cigarettes and alcohol, then it was weed, cannabis. I went on to the harder drugs. I started drinking super strength beer when I was a student, and then I went on to the class A, what we call the class A's in the UK, and I started taking heroin, which is like fucking, you know, really serious. It's quite a serious addiction, that, for me. Like, you know, I always swore that I'd never do it as well. Do you know what I mean? So it was, and to me it was dirty, but it felt good. You know, I took a little bit of speed, a little bit of magic mushrooms, a little bit of acid, but mainly it was just the alcohol, weed, and heroin. Took a bit of crack cocaine. Towards the end of my using, I was taking quite a lot of crack cocaine, and that's why I wanted to mention the drugs, because when I was taking that crack cocaine, it's like I opened the doors of perception. You know, it's funny because I took acid to get like a hallucinogenic experience, yeah, but I didn't get that experience until I took crack cocaine, and I was withdrawing off crack cocaine, I think. Is really odd, but there you go. You know, I experienced all kinds of like delusionary thinking and like hallucinogenic stuff. You know, it was all really weird. And this was around, it was all very, very strange indeed, yeah. Incredibly strange stuff. And I had a really, really seriously altered state of reality, an altered perception of reality. I had a really warped, possibly I could say, a warped sense of reality at the time. And yeah, what was I going to say? I can't remember what I was going to say about that now. I was going to say something else. Again, I've lost it again. Yeah, so I obviously ended up in psych wards. I did keep coming back once in a while to a meeting. In about 2004, before that, I was put on some psych medication. For this kind of stuff. I believe personally, I don't, I mean, these doctors, yeah, I believe they put me on that psych meds because I was experiencing withdrawals and the hallucinations that are associated with withdrawals. That's what I believe. I don't, I'm not a doctor though. I mean, I can't, the thing is, I can't diagnose myself. Do you know what I mean? I don't think. Pretty sure I can't. Self-diagnosis, yeah. Physician, heal thyself, all that stuff, yeah. Anyway, yeah. My theory is that, is that basically the doctors gave me those psych meds because, well, obviously I wasn't right. I was delusional. I had hallucinations going on. I was obviously mentally deranged. Do you know what I mean? But like now I'm clean. I'm pretty all right. Do you know, I'm pretty okay. But yeah, I just want to sort of fast forward a little bit, really. Kind of did lose something that I wanted to share with you guys there. I can't remember what it was, but I've lost something and gone off track a little bit there. I don't know what it was, but yeah, so towards like I don't know, 2009 anyway. Basically, eventually, I found my way to another rehab and I screwed up again, and then went to another rehab, Christian one this time. But it had a 12-step program, and it had Alcoholics Anonymous and a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in house, which is kind of, a bit of a breach of traditions, because nowadays I'm an addict that fully believes in the traditions, and a true NA meeting, follows the 12 traditions. But at the time I was attending what we were calling a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and it was like 99.9% residents of the rehab, So, whether or not it was actually an NA meeting, I don't know, but we had the literature and we did our best to make it an NA meeting, yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it wasn't, it didn't have anybody who was employed in the rehab was not part of that meeting. So it was just, addicts, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Nobody, there was no professionals in the meeting, basically. So, it was all right. So I did get a message there. I relapsed again after that. And basically, because I hadn't surrendered my addiction, I still thought that I could use like a normal person. I thought I could drink. I thought alcohol is not a drug. At that point, I actually disagreed with Narcotics Anonymous literature. I didn't believe alcohol was a drug. I thought Narcotics Anonymous was arrogant. The arrogance, yeah, to state that, nobody's going to stop me drinking, and I had a drink because I thought I deserved it. I convinced myself. In fact, I had to break my 12-step program because I had kind of been programmed. I kind of, did work a 12-step program in that rehab. And I had to break through that. I had to like bit like Jim Morrison did, break on through to the other side, and break that programming just so I could have a beer. In fact, it wasn't just, of course, it wasn't just one beer, was it? Though, do you know what I mean? I think I drank three on the first sitting. I don't know. Was it one the first sitting, then three the next sitting? I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Again, it doesn't matter what you used or how much either, how much what or how much you used. it's not important. All we want to do, or no, what is it? Or what was it? Well, the only thing we're interested in is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. But at the time, I didn't want help. I was more interested in drinking. And soon I found my old friends when I'd come back from rehab. I found my old friends on the street and managed to get some weed, some cannabis. And I was grateful for a smoke because I hadn't had one for about 2 years, been in rehab. It was around that time where, and I found that I managed to find some heroin again. And I was glad that I had. I was glad that I'd found my old friends. You know, because I was lonely, basically. I was lonely. I needed people. I didn't know that I was a people person, but I found out that I was, at that time, a people person. I needed to be around people. And I was grateful just to have company. But when I went back to my own flat on my own with a bag of gear one day, I got very depressed, and I remember going to a place in my mind where I felt like I was there for several days. I became very depressed and anxious, and that was when I tried to take my life by overdosing on the spoon, putting it all on a spoon, like put two bags on a spoon and injected it. And I remember my mum coming into my room, and saying, what are you doing? And I'd like basically woken up from, you know, like a, and not from, I wouldn't say, I won't be dramatic and use the word coma, because it wasn't a coma, but I was out for the count, you know what I mean? And I felt ashamed, absolutely ashamed, because I knew that I'd tried to kill myself. And my mum, who hadn't been able to get me on the phone for I don't know how long, came round and they checked on me, do you know what I mean? You know, I don't even want to go there with my mum. I don't even want to, you know, I've not been there. I've not brought that up, I don't think. Have I ever brought that up? I don't remember bringing it up with her. But, you know, it's one of the worst experiences of my life. But, you know, I think, I'd probably go as far as saying that was my rock bottom, really, yeah, because I knew it could have died. And the shame, I was so lonely, and, you know, for my mum to see me when I just tried to commit suicide was just humiliating, and you know, and the depression that I felt before that, like I say, that it was crippling, it was horrible, you know, so I would say that was my rock bottom. And I'm grateful to say that, you know, there was the only way was up after that, you know, you know, I mean, I kind of going to have to be a bit vague about the next bit, but, you know, eventually I did get back into the rooms. It took me a while, you know. I used crack cocaine, you know, like I said, you know, I was still using crack before that, and I got, towards the end, I became very obsessive about that. I stopped you. In fact, I thought, this is another NA message I've got here right now, yeah? I thought the heroin was the problem. So guess what? I stopped using heroin, and I thought, right, I'll be fine. I'll just use crack cocaine, and I'll drink, yeah? I'll drink instead of using heroin, because it's the heroin. That's the naughty drug. That's the bad one, yeah? I'll just stop that, yeah? And I'll be all right on this, yeah? That's what I did. You know, and I became really obsessive about the white. We called it the white. So I think in the US they call it ice. You know, that stuff. Anyway, I'm not gonna go into euphoric recall about it. You know, but I often do feel still 9 years clean. With 9 years clean, I still get euphoric recall about that stuff sometimes, yeah. But I'm not going to go into that verbally. But basically, nowadays, I can play the tape forward. I can see the unmanageability that it causes in my life. I'll just describe what that's like to you, just so you know. When I'm withdrawing, when I take too much of that stuff, yeah, I feel like strung, strung out is like an understatement, yeah. It's like being my consciousness feels like it's like a lake, like a lake that's been frozen over, that's just full of cracks, like the ice, you know, like the ice on a frozen lake. And it's like skating on a frozen lake, yeah, where it, the whole surface is full of cracks. It's like that. That's one of the best ways that I feel, like skating on thin, like thin ice, spiritually speaking, yeah. And that's what it's like, I feel, when I'm strung out on that shit. It's horrible, horrible. In fact, one of the worst feelings in my life, I think, being like that. It's very scary, and that's why, you know, I'm grateful today. You know, thanks, I believe, thanks to the program, yeah, that I can play that tape forward and not, because what I used to do when I kept relapsing, I used to keep dwelling on the euphoric recall, or I used to, it's like I had blinkers, and all I could see was the euphoric recall, and that would always lead me back to the next one. Do you know what I mean? All I could think about was that, you know, that oh great, you know, getting it and getting home and then using it, and that's all I could think about, yeah. But nowadays, you know, I can see the bigger picture. I can see what it did to me, you know, and also see in a bigger picture that I can actually see a bigger picture than that, because, you know, I had no money. I didn't have money for food. I didn't even buy food a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean? I didn't even have money for electricity sometimes, you know, and in the end, I started asking my mum for money for electricity when, in fact, I wasn't even going to use it on electricity. I just wanted more money to buy more crack. Do you know what I mean? Lying to her, saying, "Mum, I need money for electricity." But really what I was going to do is just get more. Just get some more of that fucking shit. Do you know what I mean? Excuse me. Excuse my French. But, you know, that stuff, yeah, is it's just, oh, jeez. You know, but you know, I mean, I'm talking about a drug, yeah, and all drugs, you know, have potentially the same, do you know what I mean? It just because if any of you didn't use the same drugs, it doesn't mean we're any different, you know, because, you know, all drugs are addictive. But I personally believe all drugs are addictive, all of them, potentially. Maybe some more than others, but you know, it's not even about necessarily about the drugs. It's for me, it's about my personality. When I was a kid, I was never comfortable with me. I didn't like being me. Today it's not like that, I don't think, necessarily, because I have a relationship with a higher power. But the me that I was when I was a kid, when I was young, was, I didn't know it, but was extremely vulnerable. And when I grew, I just didn't grow up properly. I just don't think I matured properly. And what I believe is my personality got twisted and my feelings got all mashed up, mishmashed up and mixed up. And like I say, bang, there you go, the drugs. Now you don't have to feel those feelings, all those mixed up, confused feelings. You've got drugs. Keep it simple. Lovely. Yeah. So I believe that's how it happened. You know, so I'm going to talk about some recovery now, because I've been talking about addiction quite a lot. Drugs quite a lot. I basically learned through all the time that I was going to meetings but not staying clean, you know, like kept relapsing, you know, going to a meeting here, a meeting there, but not actually stringing days together, you know, for any significant time. By the time I got to that point, yeah, where the drugs had nothing left for me, you know, basically. The NA way, the NA program, what was on offer, basically, recovery, yeah, what I'm talking about, yeah, a new way to live, living clean, all that stuff, yeah, all that, I got to a point where all that stuff, yeah, the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship, all the people in the meetings, whatever, yeah, all that stuff became more attractive than carrying on using. Carrying on using seemed like a scary idea. NA seemed like a safe place where there was some hope. Some hope, some kind of hope, do you know what I mean? Because carrying on doing what I was doing, I lost any faith in it whatsoever. It wasn't working, that's why. So, you know, like I say, I got to that point, you know, where NA became more attractive. And by that time, I'd learned that there were certain things I needed to do to fully surrender to the Narcotics Anonymous program. And that was find a sponsor, go to meetings. And in fact, when I say go to meetings, what I heard was 90 meetings in 90 days. So that's what I did. But, you know, get stuck in with service, you know, be of service. I learned in treatment, you know, being the value, the important value of being of service to others. Because as an addict, I suppose I did it as an addict. I used to serve, I used to do stuff for my mum sometimes. But serving others for me is kind of, I don't know. When I used to serve in active addiction, when I used to serve people, there was always an ulterior motive. When I got clean, I kind of served just because I wanted to, just because it felt good. You know, I would wash the cups. You know, people drink tea at meetings, at face-to-face meetings, so you have a lot of coffee mugs, yeah? Like you know, like maybe 5 or 10 coffee mugs, you know, and at the end of the meeting somebody has to wash the coffee mugs, you know. So I'd sometimes, you know, often I'd wash the coffee mugs. I might put the chairs out at the meeting. I might put the cards out, you know, and like just basically serving other people. It felt good. You know, so and not only that, I just knew it was the right way to go. I knew it was part of the program was serving people, serving the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Now, service over the years has kept me connected to the fellowship, and you know, where I might have felt isolated in many cases, I haven't been, because I've been connected to the fellowship through service, and it's helped me stay grounded. Given me, like, it's part of my foundation in recovery is service. But the other, you know, like there is other things. Service alone will not give me recovery. We need to do more than just service. So we work the steps with a sponsor. And I can say we because I know there's more. It's not just me. I am not alone. It's not just me that does this stuff, yeah. And anyone who isn't doing it, you know, just keep coming back and hopefully, you know. And if NA is the place for you, you know, then maybe you know. I hope that you just get what you need out of it. But you know, the thing is, when I say that, you get what you need. You know, we all need to get what we need. Yeah, of course we do. You know, I come to meetings to get what I need. But ideally, what I'm coming to meetings for really is to give something. You know, it's so much. You know what they used to say about Christmas. Yeah, they used to say when I was a kid, they used to say, you know, giving. It's all in the giving. You know, they used to say. And I used to think, what a load of tosh that is, you know, it's all in the giving. Yeah, seriously, yeah. You know, but like, you know, and it's only when I got into recovery and got clean, like after, you know, since like what, you know, like say 9 years ago and onwards, yeah, you know, that I've actually understood the value of giving, especially giving of service, giving service and doing things for other people and the happiness and the joy, you know, like really can be in the giving and you know, giving basically love is what it all boils down to. Yeah, really. Yeah, giving, you know, like so many people are so unhappy in this world because they're seeking love, they're looking for it everywhere. Yeah, and really, yeah, you know, it's all about giving it. Do you know what I mean? I wish I was always in a place to do that, though. You know, sometimes I need to receive as well. Do you know what I mean? We all need to receive, you know. But the real pleasure is in the giving. Yeah, it is in the giving, I'd have to say, yeah. Really, truly, yeah. It is nice to receive, though, having said that, definitely, yeah. And sometimes I believe we all need to receive that love, you know. Sometimes we all need it. Do you know what I mean? It's necessary for growth, for life, to live, you know, to enjoy life. But, you know, I mean, I kind of found this out, you know. I don't know, man. I work the steps. You know, I can't really say much more than that right now. You know, like I did service, I got a sponsor, I went to meetings and I read the literature. And those are basically the suggestions. Those are the things that, you know, people like me, that's what we do, you know. You know, if you're an addict like me and you do that stuff, you know, you've got a great chance of recovering, basically, yeah. You know, there's many of us who have done it and know that it works. So, you know, today, you know, like I said before, you might have heard at the start of the meeting, I'm driving. I've got a job, and it's driving cars around, delivering cars. Yeah, I'm sitting in an Audi, sitting on the on the on in the estuary, looking overlooking the estuary, which is a nice view. And I'm sitting in an Audi TT, an Audi Quattro TT, which isn't mine. It's not my car. It's actually a work vehicle. It's not even a work vehicle. I'm delivering it to auction tomorrow. But I've got the pleasure of driving this vehicle today, tonight,
It's
and
just me,
tomorrow. Dri
Steve. You're breaking up a bit there, brother.
Oh, it's just great, isn't it? Yeah. So I can see I've got four bars here. I'm not really sure what that's all about. Maybe somebody's got some interference near me. I don't know. Just, a camper van's just pulled up next to me. Can you hear me all right now?
Yep.
Yeah, I
I
don't
can
know.
hear you clearly,
You can
MC.
hear me clearly.
Yes,
Awesome.
sir.
Awesome stuff,
Yeah,
my friend. Okay. Right,
loud
so
and clear.
I should continue. Yeah, so I was just I'm just trying to speak about how life is today. Like I said at the start of my share, you know, you guys know me, do you know what I mean? You know me. Life is not always easy. My life is not always easy. Sometimes I come here and I talk about my troubles, my difficulties, my problems, and I do sometimes, yeah. But life today is good. You know, my home situation, my family, my partner. That's all looking good right now. My work situation, my relationships with my colleagues, that's all looking good. I'm sitting here in an Audi TT, a nice little car. You know, I mean, I've always wanted to drive one of these. Do you know what I mean? Oh, I just wanted to get. Doesn't mean I need to own it. I just want fancy to have one. You know, just to have one for a few hours, just to drive around in, which is what I've got. It was on my wish list. Do you know what I mean? These are things that I may well have asked my higher power, the God of my understanding, for in the past. Do you know what I mean? My experience tells me that if I truly, if I ask in good faith, if it's true, if it's meant to be, it will happen. But you know, the program tells us to only ask for God's will, you know, and that's it. And that's all we're supposed to be asking for, you know. My belief is that if it's God's will, it's going to happen. You know, it will happen if it is truly God's will. But you know, it certainly was for me to get a day clean and then string 9 years of worth of days together. I believe, you know, I have faith at least anyway. I don't even know, you know, the word God, yeah, shit, man. That's you know, honestly, I ain't even going into all that, yeah, but like all I can say is it works, do you know what I mean? Like I just know that basically faith, when it comes down to it, for me, faith works. Lack of faith doesn't work, yeah. I need faith because it's the only thing that works for me, yeah. It's the only thing that works for me. I have to have faith. If I haven't got faith, I'm losing faith, yeah. You know, somehow I've got to get it back, do you know what I mean? Because you know, and I might need sometimes to work step one again and admit my powerlessness and unmanageability and to once more again somehow miraculously find faith. But faith is how it, for me, how it works. I need to have faith in the program. But I can, but you know, I can find, sometimes I can lose faith and I can find faith through the steps, through the program, and through the fellowship, through you guys, through people, you know. But I do have, I'll I don't know if I'll finish. How long have I been going on for? Probably nearly 3/4 of an hour. I do have, just so you know, I do have a religious faith as well. But I'm not too strung out. I'm not too strung out on on I'm not. What I'm trying to say is I'm not hung up on what other people believe. It's like, somebody else can say something about a higher power, and I think, oh yeah, I can think of it like that. I kind of sense that as well. And like, my truth, yeah, isn't necessarily different from anybody else's, really, is what I find. It's just how I choose to see it. That's all, yeah. That's the only, I just see it from a different angle. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I listen to some of you guys, some of you share. My truth, it's really, I can see it. I can kind of see it from, see, I can see it your way as well. I can see, yeah, so your way makes sense as well, to me, yeah. And I like that. That's what I love about NA, yeah. The truth works, the program works. But yeah, I've got a religious program. I've got a religious understanding. I can. The program has given me the gift, yeah, to be able to make sense of religion. Because before the program, before recovery, before I got clean, I couldn't make any sense of it. It didn't work for me, yeah. It's only when I got clean that medicine, religion, and psychiatry work for me, yeah. Even before I got clean, even psychiatry didn't work for me, yeah. I thought it was a load of nonsense, yeah. And I thought medicine didn't work, hospitals, all that, I was against, I was a rebel. I didn't get on with the police. Nothing about society and anything, including religion, didn't work. I knew it was all, I don't know, man. It just didn't, it just, I needed the program. And once I got clean on the program, like I say, religion made a lot, started to make sense. It started to make sense to me. I was no longer fighting the police. I actually started liking the police. I started being able to communicate with the doctors effectively, and I started to become a useful, productive, and responsible member of society. So, I would say, I'd have to say thank you to Narcotics Anonymous for making all that possible. And thank you all for listening to me share. And I think that's me done. So I'll leave it there. Yeah. Cheers.